Marjorie Holland, Barbara Strasburger, Leslie Lichka, Tina Rodriguez, Ty Brown, Clara Welsh, Maria Pasco, Caroline Acune Aguilertas, Monica Benson Barros, Suzanne, Elizabeth, Joy, Michelle, Carolyn, Monica, Jeanette, Nancy, and Mira. If you'd like to hear the complete one-hour version of the Breast Cancer Monologues, visit StageTheLetterNStudio.com to find out how you can win a download of the entire documentary, or visit MediaRights.org, capital MediaRights.org, to purchase your own copy of the Breast Cancer Monologues. This project was made possible by the Regional Arts and Culture Council and the Oregon Arts Commission. For more info about breast cancer, visit breastcancer.org and bcaction.org. For Stage and Studio, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
I've been a rambler all my romp and roaring days, a railroad boy with nothing for to do.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society 2019-20 concert season. Bill Staines is the featured artist for the upcoming October 11 concert. Bill Staines is a singer-songwriter whose career has spanned five decades, and his songs have been recorded by many well-known artists. That's Bill Staines in concert, Friday, October 11 at 7:30 p.m. at the Reedwood Friends Church, 2901 Southeast Steel Street in Portland. For more information, go to kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Coming up next is Art Focus. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Clinton Street Theater, open since 1915, featuring independent films, parties, and community events. Located at 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. Full event schedule, tickets, showtimes, and more information online at cstpdx.com. And now, Art Focus.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Add him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You are listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Janine Nagy. She's a painter, and her current show, Box Breathing, is on now at PDX Contemporary Art in the Pearl through November the 2nd. Thanks for coming into KBOO.
Thank you, Janine, for inviting me.
You've been here before.
I have.
A while ago,
yes, when I was the first curator in residence at Disjecta. I was on with Avanta Gabawa, who is an artist in my program.
Uh-huh. I think people know your name, Janine Nagy, but you actually live in California, so you're kind of here but not here.
Yes.
And you have a kind of a different history. You used to make sort of colorful work, but what they're going to see if they go to PDX this month is black squares.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Right. And you actually refer to them as black squares.
I do, yes. Okay. It's easy to understand.
Mm-hmm. So as I walked into the gallery, I turned left to the little wall that just sort of backs onto the office, and there were some pieces there. So, well, there was one called Mass 17, which is a lot like the bigger ones on the far wall. So these are big squares, mm-hmm. and they're sort of raised up paper.
Mm-hmm.
They look kind of woven, and the general appearances of chevrons or right angles with lots of other right angles within them pointing. They don't all point to each other, they sort of point just off. So
yes.
You're looking at, it's kind of like a big cross or a bunch of triangles pointing at each other. It's, how would you describe it?
Well, it's interesting that you say triangles, because I was thinking more of lines and corners.
Mm-hmm.
And the triangles happen by the nature of the process. So where the two lines intersect and overlap is where that raised up area happens.
Mm-hmm.
And with all of those compositions, I was thinking more so of the four corners on each of the outside of the composition in relationship to the center of the piece.
So these are strips of torn paper, but how many layers are you using to make it raised up?
Either just one layer, and then where they overlap, and well, two layers essentially. But it's just in those areas that you're referring to as folded areas. That's where they double up.
Mm-hmm. And then beneath everything is more paper.
It starts as first as a wood panel that then gets coated with just a flat layer of paper, because that makes it just a more absorbent ground for the torn paper to glue onto.
Mm-hmm. And is this a soggy process?
It's not. It's a very kind of clean and controlled process. I start with making a gigantic pile of torn paper strips that I work on for probably about a week before I start making the pieces. Hmm. And then, that's the first stage of it. And then the second stage of it is coating all the panels with the flat paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then once that's ready to go, that's when I start to figure out what I want to do compositionally. So it's sort of regimented in that sense. And then each strip is literally hold it up with the paintbrush, dip the paintbrush in glue, and paint as you go down the strip.
And you're so applying then it's kind of, it?
Yeah.
As you go.
I hold it up kind mm-hmm. of and then paint it. And then it is a little gooey in that sense, mm-hmm. like in that stage right there. And then just kind of carefully place it down.
Right. So you're not doing multiple layers. This texture is just from ones and twos,
yes,
really.
Yes, which is that surprised me very much. I did not know that I was going to be able to have that much. That's a very maximal result from a minimal gesture.
Mm-hmm. And then the graphite or the blackness, where does that come from?
That is essentially a paint that I make in my studio that uses powdered graphite. And once all of the paper construction is complete, it gets coated with this paint that I make. Then once that's dry, it's burnished.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the sheen comes in, is in the burnishing process.
There's a sheen?
I think so.
I didn't notice.
Oh, yeah. You got to walk around them.
Well, one of the things is that they're very well lit, so they're channeled maybe
mm-hmm.
three lights on some of them.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger ones on the right side of the room as you come in, they have three lights.
Yeah.
Because really, it's all about the texture. You can't, if it was a dark hallway,
right,
you'd just see a black square, right?
Yes, and that is something that, you and I had been talking about, this idea of the relationship of the viewer and the work. And what I hope is that the viewer takes the time to like physically engage the work by doing that moving around that you're talking about, because where you are in relationship to them, things can shift in relationship to your distance and to the light, and those mm-hmm. are things that I'm interested in
mm-hmm.
having happen.
At First Thursday, there were two kind of young guys came in. You don't often see young guys
uh-huh.
together looking at art, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
They're usually being dragged there by
uh-huh.
a woman. And uh-huh. they were like, oh. And they sort of walked up and down the four, and they were like comparing. They were trying to find something to say about it.
Uh-huh.
And they were just comparing the differences in the patterns.
Uh-huh.
Is that what you mean by an active viewership?
Yes, definitely. And just the idea of taking the slowness to look, to see, okay, I'm looking at five black squares that are using the same kind of methodology of making. So where is their difference in each of those? And where can there be discovering that? Which that's very much what I'm trying to do in my work, is provide an opportunity for slowness.
Mm-hmm. So explain about box breathing. Where does the term come from?
It comes primarily from my yoga practice, which has now become a daily part of my life.
Oh,
and
yeah. Did you go today?
I didn't go today. Today I ate meatloaf for breakfast instead.
Come on, they have it on YouTube now. You don't
even
have to go to a gym.
That's very true. Maybe later tonight. It depends on what all is happening in the household. But we do try to go every single day. But so just going is first of all a ritual for me. But within that, there are these what are called pranayamas, which are different types of breathing exercises or practices within yoga. And box breathing is one where it is often used for, athletes and a lot of times like corporate people as a way to kind of de-stress. But the idea of it is to breathe in for however many counts. Usually it's 4 counts or 5 counts, and to hold the breath for the same amount of time, and then to let the breath out for the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. So then what happens is that you become conscious of that time and that moment, and everything else is intended to kind of slow down. So that I thought was an appropriate way to think about the work.
Is it audible?
It doesn't have to be.
Can you do it now on the radio audibly?
I would rather not.
Okay. But in yoga, how would you do it? Is it audible?
The
teacher's always saying, yep, let out a deep, yep, a
noise.
They
ask you to use your nose for both the inhale and the exhale.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes from, you know, some of the pranayamas ask you to use your nose and hold one nostril, and then on the exhale, switch to the other nostril, where mm-hmm. you're actively, you know, manipulating the physicality of your face to do mm-hmm. the breathing.
Is this the first time you've done a yoga-themed title or a consciously yoga?
It's not, actually. It's not. I'd had a show in Denver a couple of years ago that was called The Temperature of the Atmosphere Underneath Your Skin. That was something that we had talked about in a class. And again, you know, just goes back to that idea of being present in the moment and allowing yourself to have sensation and to honor that and to explore that.
Mm-hmm.
So
the collection of black squares, first of all, they're not all black squares, right? There are these ones that they're similar, and you make smaller versions because it's a commercial gallery, right? You need, people can't all afford like $5,000, you know, you make a
yes.
$2,000 one.
Yes.
But you also make, what's the name of the really big one in the corner?
The big one is called Untitled from Box Breathing.
Okay. That to me, it looks like a ziggurat. You know, it's the stairs going up and a big doorway and everything is multiply outlined. That's the only kind of image I really get.
Mm-hmm.
But people loved it. You know, they were standing mm-hmm. there a lot longer and staring mm-hmm. at it a lot longer.
Mm-hmm. People were excited about that one.
Yeah. Why do you think they go for that?
I was kind of surprised that that one was as popular as it was. I think that probably the fact that it is human scaled and, you know, what you're talking about with it relating to a doorway or to a stairway or to a hallway, I wasn't really thinking of that when I was making it. I was at the time thinking about ritual and thinking about, you know, I guess you could say religious objects, but objects that have, you know, some kind of significance. Ritualized objects, and I was also thinking of ritualized spaces and temples, and I was looking at footprints of temples, like from the ground mm-hmm. or from the air down,
yeah.
And those, you know, just different kinds of pyramids, three-sided pyramids versus four-sided pyramids, and just what those looked like from the air, and that composition came from that.
Mm-hmm.
But with that being said, it is not one particular pyramid. It was just the visual language of that was something I was interested in exploring. But after it got built and finished and hung on the wall, then all those other things started happening.
So the smaller ones, it sounds like you make multiple at a time. So you do all the tearing, and that's mm-hmm. one kind of process.
Yes.
And then the gluing, the laying it out is another process. What about the big one? Did you ever lie it out on a big sawhorse?
That's exactly what I did, yeah. So he existed as a panel first, like the other ones. And since he was such a huge panel, he just went directly onto 2 sawhorses, so as opposed to sitting on another table or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually, I worked on him only until it was done because I just wasn't quite sure how it was all going to come together, and measuring is not something I'm very good at, even though it's something very critical to the work. So sometimes I will plan things, and then when they actually translate to the larger works, the plan is really just only a guide, and, you know, decisions need to be made as the piece unfolds.
Mm-hmm. So just tell me about making the strips. Do you just get a ruler and tear the paper against the ruler?
That's exactly right.
And you use a special, what kind of paper are you tearing?
It's an Arches hot press watercolor paper, because it can take the glue, but it could also tear easily.
Mm-hmm.
And then it could also take the paint as well. It doesn't buckle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And does it have a grain? Like if you tore it the other way, would it be really difficult?
It does have a grain, but it's not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think because it's cotton.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's soft.
So when you were doing the big one, you were tearing like really long strips.
No, were you using multiple? All of the strips come from a sheet, and the sheet is, you know, 22 by 30 or something in that scale.
Mm-hmm.
So I just make the longest strips that I could make out of that sheet. And then to make the large piece with the larger strips, they're just, instead of overlapping to create that woven look, they're just perfectly butted up against each other. So if you really, really look, you could see little seams, but they're pretty butted up.
Mm-hmm. And that's just you and your scissors.
That's just me and my ruler.
Roller?
Yes.
What's a roller?
The ruler to tear.
Oh, ruler.
Yeah, no scissors involved.
Oh, so it's always torn.
It's always torn.
Torn edge.
Yes. Yeah. And the tearing, it's, you know, the act of tearing is, that process is important to the work because that's, you know, that's the ritualized activity for that portion of the work. And then, you know, the building of it becomes the next activity. So, which is funny because Avantika, who I had mentioned I was on here with many years ago, she said, you know, you can just put that paper in a paper shredder, right? I was like, yeah, I do know that.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You are listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Janine Nagy. She's a painter, and her show Box Breathing is on now at PDX Contemporary Art on 9th Avenue in the Pearl, and it's running through November the 2nd. You have a very different piece on the wall. It's a banner, and it's paper, but it's sort of hanging against the wall, and it curls up at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is silver or black.
Mm-hmm.
So is that silver leaf squares mm-hmm. you used?
It's actually tarnished silver leaf.
Oh, you can buy it pre-tarnished.
No, somebody wanted to get rid of it because they thought it was ruined, and I thought, I'm sure I can come up with something for that.
And did you draw on the silver leaf?
There are some, no. It's okay. All of the, so the top part, that's the black, mm-hmm. Is graphite, which is different than the other black squares because it's actually done with pencil. So that whole top part is just filled in with pencil. And then the silver leaf is applied to the bottom panel directly.
Mm-hmm. And then there are like 8 missing ones. So what happened there?
They're not missing. They're just tarnished differently.
Really?
Yeah. It's all coated.
Oh, they're there?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's really interesting how much variety it gets.
Do they come out of a little box like in different states of tarnish?
They were, but I think it was just because they... You know, they lived outside and, you know, they lived in somebody's studio for a while and then somebody, you know, gathered them together in the box. I don't think that I got them in the way that they were originally packaged.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the texture of the rest of the paper, mm-hmm. you know, hanging up is sort mm-hmm. of diagonal mm-hmm. creases.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do that?
That piece is made out of 5 different panels of paper. And each one of those panels first gets folded to make those, I guess, kind of square or diamond-like shapes. And then after it's folded, that's when I go back and draw over that with the pencil. And then that all gets assembled at the end.
Mm-hmm. What's the deal with the folding?
The deal with the folding is this work has a trajectory from a very long time ago, and actually began at my first show that I had with Jane. That was called Measure, which was also black squares, but those were flat drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested in seeing if I could make compositions happen with just the direction of the graphite and the way that the light hit it. So when those pieces were made, a lot of the conversation or questions about that was, you know, what is the material, and, you know, did it look like metal, and, you know, people had, you know, were thinking all these different things about it, which kind of made me wonder about this idea of image versus object, and does that matter, but kind of curious to think of, like, if you were going to make a drawing that you intended to be an object, how would you do that? You know, people use different kinds of framing devices to do that. In my case, I was interested in having the drawing itself have a little bit more physicality. So that's where the folding had originally come in.
Hmm. So that the banner is lit by 5 lights.
I just realized that last night. It's very well lit, yes.
3 up the front yeah. and then 2 in the middle of the room, uh-huh. further back.
Yeah.
So it takes quite a lot of light to see these things. Mm-hmm. Where do they end up? Do people stick them in their living rooms and they get, you know, they're lit wrong?
I try not to think of that, but I don't know the answer. Banner is the fifth or sixth of, and he's also the smallest of a body of work that are these very, what I consider, monumentally scaled drawings. Mm-hmm. That are all built the same way and hang the same way, similar to, you know, how you would maybe think of a textile hanging on the wall or something of that nature, where it becomes very much a thing. Mm-hmm. So those are a little bit more kind of on the institutional side of things, I think. People aren't really buying these for their houses yet.
Would they be framed?
Those are not intended to be framed. But again, you know, once people give Jane their credit card, what they do with the work is up to them. But right. but they are very much intended to be objects. They're delicate.
You wouldn't want people walking near them because they're going to flap up.
They will flap up. Mm-hmm. But they're surprisingly hardier than you think. Because the paper is strong and mm-hmm. the graphite is not, you're not going to smear it or ruin it. I mean, you don't want to touch it with greasy pizza fingers, but mm-hmm. besides that, it's pretty hardy.
Some of the smaller works are done on palm paper, mm-hmm. which you make yourself. It's kind of a rough looking pale paper.
Yes. That is paper that I developed here in Portland at Pulp and Deckel with the artist Jen Woodward. They invited me to do a residency. I guess it's been 2 years now since that. And where I live in my town, we have lots of downed palm fronds. And I am very enamored of palm trees, and I think many people are. And mm-hmm. the idea of the palm tree is this kind of symbol of luxury for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, they're great when you see them swaying in the breeze, but then when these gigantic, huge palm fronds come, like, shooting out of the sky and, like,
oh, yeah.
hit your car, and, like, they're crazy
they're
and
deadly.
Huge, and they're all over the place.
And Santa Monica, they're
yes.
everywhere. And
they're
you
everywhere.
See tourists walking
yes.
along, and, like, with strollers and
yes.
this 50-pound thing, like
yeah.
a plank comes
it's
out.
It's crazy and fascinating.
So you pick them up and mulch them?
I do, because people get, it's like they become like a nuisance for people, and I feel bad for them, so I want to kind of give them a new life. And mm-hmm. so yeah, I harvest them and cut them up, and then ship them to Jen, and she pulps them up for me. First we have to cook, they get soaked, and then they get cooked in lye,
oh,
and then
okay.
they get rinsed, and then they get put in the paper beater, and then we add the silver pigment, so they have like a little bit of sheen because we add the silver pigment to it, and then mix it all up, and then just pull it as like Western style sheets of paper.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
So you don't really have to do anything; you just send it.
I used to do it. You know, we used to do it together, but now she kindly does it for me. So
and sends you the paper by return.
She sends me a big old bag of pulp, a big wet bag of pulp.
What do you do with that?
then I make it into the sheets in my studio.
Oh, you've got the machinery for making paper.
I don't have the machine for making the pulp, but I can make the sheets of paper at my studio.
Yeah. Okay.
So we work in tandem on those for sure.
What's the name again?
Her studio is called Pulp and Deckel.
Yeah.
It's in the Disjecta building, and the residency was organized through C3 Initiative, and her name is Jen Woodward.
Oh, okay. So palm grid, you took a square of your own paper and then drew a grid and then touched white gouache in every little square.
Yes.
Dot.
Yes. And each square is the moment that I'm existing, and then I make the next one, and hopefully it all gets filled up.
So the making it is sort of meditative.
Very much.
How does that translate to the viewer feeling anything?
Well, I hope that it kind of goes back to that idea of slowness and curiosity and, you know, the fact that it is on this unusually handmade paper. I just hope that it creates an opportunity for more sensitivity of being a person in the world.
You got to stand up close to it and stare at it.
Yeah.
Because it's small.
Yes. These are small. I have a solo show coming up at my gallery in Los Angeles next month, and those palm grids are very large.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So the grid size is the same, but the pieces are, you know, 70 by 40.
So the grid here is like half a centimeter by half a centimeter,
it's,
isn't it?
It is something an like eighth that. Of an inch. So is that a half a centimeter? I don't know.
Let's say it is. Yeah, it's quite small. So you've done big ones of these.
Yes.
How long do they take?
A very, very, very long time.
Like a week?
4 months.
4 months?
3 months.
Can you outsource the dabbing to somebody else?
Absolutely not. That's what I live for.
That's the artistry.
All I want to do is make the little boxes.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is so funny because people are like, when are you going to get an assistant? And I'm like, hopefully never.
In the corner, there's one. It's called Palm Flag Black Square. Mm-hmm. And it's totally different from everything mm-hmm. else. It's a black square of what looks like silk.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle is a white square mm-hmm. painted, I think. And then above it is a palm frond like you get at Palm Sunday at mm-hmm. church or mm-hmm. like you found in the street. Mm-hmm. Small one.
Yes.
I found
him in the street.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Why that's totally different medium?
He's kind of the bridge between the two bodies of work, between what we're talking about is the black squares and the palm grids. So he's, like I said, he's kind of like the bridge between both of those. And he's also part of a larger series of flags. And with the flags, I'm thinking about this idea of like having just a ownership of where you are at in your life and in the world and who you are as a person. And then thinking of the flag as this idea of a surrender, but not surrender in the sense of giving up, more so in the sense of giving over, like giving yourself over to your experience and to your life and to your world.
Mm-hmm.
That piece was actually also made here in Portland at Watershed, which is a print. It's part of PNCA. It's the MFA in printed media that's run by Matthew Letzelter. They have a collaborative printmaking class, and they invited myself and my husband to come and make work with them, and that piece was made there. And the silver part that you're referring to was actually the plate of a print, and that was built the same way as the black square pieces. So to build that, we used a square of plexiglass, and I cut strips of silk and laid that down in the same way that I laid down the torn paper. And then, so that became the plate that we inked up. And then the silk, instead of using paper, we used silk, and then we ran all of that through the printing press.
Oh, that yeah. big square
yeah.
of silk.
Yeah.
The whole thing went through?
The whole
Did
thing.
Did you fold it up?
They have a very special press there. That is, I think, maybe one of the largest presses in any college in the United States.
Really?
Yeah.
So what color was the silk before it went through?
The silk is black.
Okay.
So the plate was small.
So you were just printing the silver bit
Correct.
In the middle.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So it's linked in these other, you know, in ways that are, you know, through process. And
is that a process you would ever use again?
Yeah, I'm interested
printing
in these.
On
yeah,
silk.
These flags. They there are several, and I hope to continue to make more of those.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually showing that collection of work along with what I talked about earlier, these monumental drawings, at a show at the University of Wisconsin in January. So that'll be nice to see all of that work together.
Mm-hmm. Did you think why don't I just do normal silkscreen printing?
No, I never thought of that. I don't know why. I think because I'm not a printmaker, so I'm not totally good at knowing like what
oh,
will happen
okay.
where.
You just come at it from your own
uh-huh.
angle.
And I am very lucky that people are kind enough to just let me figure that out with them.
So you live in the desert. Well, you live in Riverside,
yep.
California,
yep.
which is halfway between Los Angeles and Palm Springs.
That's right.
Why do you live there, and is that good for work?
It's excellent for work, and it's close to things, but it's not living in the city,
mm-hmm.
and we can afford a house with studios for two artists, and it's just very mellow, and it's very good for headspace and
mm-hmm.
getting work done without distractions, and we have great weather.
How does Portland feel when you come back here?
Oh my gosh, it is just, there's so much traffic here. It's crazy. It's just, it's exponential growth every time we return, which is probably every 5 months.
Do you feel like you could get as much work done here?
No, because there's so many good bars and restaurants, I would be very busy hanging out with friends.
Would you be able to find a studio here if you had to move back?
I don't think so. From what I hear, there's no more left.
Yeah.
This is what I hear. This seems like a very challenging place to be an artist right now for that reason, for affordability and for access to space.
Yeah.
So.
But there is a community of artists. At least you can talk to people.
Absolutely.
Face to face.
Yes.
Do you have one in your town?
We do to some degree. I mean, I feel like in my town I have more fitness friends than art friends, which is also kind of a nice change of pace. But, you know, I have a full-time teaching job and talk to students about art all the time and, you know, spend time with colleagues. So at home it's just kind of nice to work in the studio and hang out with my desert tortoise. Who lives in our backyard.
Is your tortoise a she, or a they?
It's a she. Her name is Buttercup. She's middle-aged. She's getting ready to hibernate for the winter coming up here soon. So,
my name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Janine Nagy. She's a painter, and her show Box Breathing is on now at PDX Contemporary Art through November the 2nd. Thanks very much for coming back to KBOO, Janine.
Thank you so much for having me.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll host the third annual Dia de los Muertos celebration on Thursday, October 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. We'll be showing short films recognizing the traditional practices and beliefs of El Día de los Muertos as practiced in Mexico, Ecuador, Nicaragua, and Bolivia. We'll also have dancing, food, and music to honor our beloved dead. Again, that's the third annual Día de los Muertos celebration on Thursday, October 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right